May it please the court, Tacy Flint for Defendant Appellant ARTCO. I'd like to focus on two issues today. First, the district court made a legal error in holding that specific intent to save the vessel in question is not required for a salvage award. Under longstanding case law, the plaintiffs here were not entitled to a salvage award from ARTCO because they didn't have specific intent to save ARTCO property. Second, even if there was salvage, the award in this case was an abuse of discretion because it was premised on legal error. Most clearly, the court recognized that the circumstances required an award smaller than the award that this court approved in Margate, but the district court went on to approve a percentage nearly twice as high, resulting in a salvage award beyond all historical bounds. If the award is allowed to stand at 20% of the value of the saved vessels, that will be among the highest percentage awards permitted in American law and will dramatically disrupt the law of salvage. I'll start with specific intent. The district court made a legal error when it concluded that salvage law doesn't require the salver to intend to save the property in question. Cases throughout history have required intent to save the property. In Merritt, the Supreme Court held that there was no salvage where the plaintiffs put out a fire on a pier. Putting out that fire kept a vessel moored to the pier safe, but the court held that that wasn't salvage because the plaintiffs acted, and I'm quoting, for the purpose of extinguishing the fire on the pier, not to save the vessel. In Henner versus United States, the court said, and again, I quote, salvage law requires that to be a salver, a party must have the intention to save the property involved. And in Barry versus Boat Giannina, the court held that a claimant was not a salver because it had salved the defendant's, it had pulled up the defendant's lobster traps unintentionally. It had retained those traps on its boat without the intent of rescuing them, and its efforts were not designed to rescue the property in question. The different cases on fires make this clear. The court in Atlantis Marine Towing walked through this analysis. So there's Merritt, which I talked about before. In that case, the plaintiffs put out a fire on a pier, and the court said no salvage because the intention of the efforts was to save the pier. But then the Atlantis Marine Court talked about another case called the Neshaminy, where a barge was attached to a floating dry dock. There was a fire on the dry dock. The salvage plaintiffs put that fire out, and the court said that is salvage because those plaintiffs did have the intent of saving the barge when they put out the fire on the dry dock. The Atlantis Marine Court likewise held that it was not salvage. They rejected the defendant's argument that there was, the plaintiff's argument that salvage requires putting out a fire on a particular vessel and said—
In the case law, must there be one single solitary, solely animating intent, or can there be coexisting states of intent?
The critical question is there intent to save that vessel? There can certainly be other motives, but when the plaintiffs are, there can be motives, when the plaintiffs are acting, the question is there intent to save that vessel that they're working on?
Well, the district found alternatively that they did, correct?
Well, in this court, in this case, the district court found that the plaintiffs had a desire to save downriver property. It said non-lower river property, not just property owned by the plaintiffs, but also property downriver. And that finding did not reflect a specific intent to save ARTCO vessels.
Saying alternatively that they did have, the salvos had specific intent in addition. Maybe I read it wrong, but I thought as an alternative or in combination with what it found about the downriver, but maybe I'm wrong.
I believe the court's referring to paragraph 14 in the conclusions of law, and the court did make an alternative holding. First, the district court said there's no specific intent requirement, and then it said, but I find these plaintiffs had an intent to save non-lower river property. It did not say, I find that these plaintiffs had an intent to save ARTCO property specifically. And that's a critical difference in the case law. As this court explained in Margate, the purpose, the concept of salvage awards is to incentivize conduct. It's to incentivize salvors to save imperiled property at sea. It doesn't make sense to talk about incentivizing unintentional conduct. It doesn't make sense to talk about a vessel owner reaching a hypothetical agreement with a potential salvor to unintentionally benefit the vessel owner's property. Because the case law focuses on incentives and hypothetical agreements, that's where the specific intent requirement comes from. And keep in mind that salvage, of course, is an exception. It's different from land-based law, which does not allow this kind of, you know, compelled payment by an owner to a rescuer of the property. This is unique to salvage, and it's a constraint that the cases clearly put on salvage awards that they must follow from specific intent to save that vessel. Now, the plaintiffs have talked about motive. They've said motive is irrelevant. But motive and intent are clearly different. And again, this is throughout the case law. Intent is about what property are you trying to save. Motive is about why. Why are you taking these actions? So there are cases that make this very clear. If a vessel, it's not salvage if salvors take some action to save their own vessel. A clear case on this is the Acorn. In that case, plaintiffs saw another vessel called the Speedwell coming toward them. They put out fenders. The fenders made the collision between the Speedwell and Acorn minimal and caused the Speedwell to go off to the side where it caused no damage to itself or any other vessel. But that court said no salvage because the crew of the Acorn was trying to save their own vessel, not the Speedwell. But the Benedict Treatise, when it talks about motive, says there can be salvage if the salvors save a vessel with the motive of helping themselves. If their intent is to save a vessel, even though they're trying to save their own lives, that can be salvage. Benedict talks about a case called the F.I. Merriman. In that case, the crew of a distressed vessel, the Scala, transferred from their vessel to the Merriman. Their vessel was sinking. They jumped onto the Merriman. They helped the Merriman. They allowed it to navigate to port. And the court said, that is salvage. And we're not troubled by the fact that you jumped onto the Merriman to save your own lives because you were trying to save the Merriman. And that's what you need for salvage, intent to save that vessel. Why you saved that vessel doesn't matter. The record here is clear that there wasn't intent to save the Artco barges. Judge Stewart, you and I talked about the district court's finding. The finding did not relate to specific intent to save Artco barges. It said a general intent to save non-lower river property, which is not the same as intent to save Artco barges. And this issue was clearly raised in the district court. Had the court, which of course heard all of the testimony, saw all of the exhibits, had it seen support for a finding that these plaintiffs intended to save Artco barges, it surely would have said so, but it didn't. It said this comment about general desire to save non-lower river property. And that's exactly what the record reflects. The plaintiffs testified that their purpose was to protect their own equipment, but they wound up—
I didn't understand the law. I mean, you got a very experienced trial judge, been at it a long time, but it's not to say errors can't be made, but the case was briefed up one side, briefed down the other in terms of the governing law. So, you know, presumably the point you raised was raised below, right? You know, in terms of the requisite intent, so where, how did the district court, pun intended, get off course?
The court misread the case law as not requiring specific intent. And to be fair to the court, the case law sometimes uses different terms like purpose, design, but they all get to the point of intent. So that was a legal error. And the record confirms there is no specific intent here. So had the court focused on the specific intent as required by the case law, it would have found no salvage. Now, I'd also like to talk about the damages award in this case. I think the clearest error is that the district court found this case required a lower award than this court previously approved in Margate. In Margate, the court said that the extraordinary facts of the rescue there supported the highest possible award on all of the relevant factors under Blackwell. In this case, the district court said 3 out of the 10 salvage convention factors, 2 out of the 6 Blackwell factors, those largely overlap, were not demonstrated. And so for that reason, the court said the award should be lower than Margate. But then the court went on to award a higher percentage of the salvage property value than the court did in Margate. It said lower award, but it ended up awarding a percentage that was nearly twice as high. And this court explained in Margate that that type of outcome-based analysis is inappropriate. In Margate, the court rejected the idea that you can use a higher percentage to achieve a desired amount. Instead, the percentage has to be determined based on the factors, and then you apply it to the property value of the salvaged property, and that's how you get the number. Here, had the district court analyzed just the factors on their own, according to its own finding that the award needed to be less than Margate because the factors didn't support the same level of award as in Margate, it had to use a lower percentage than 20%. And to be clear, 20% is a historically high number. In Margate, the court laid out a great chart and cited the Gilmore and Black treatise in footnote 28, which said that 20% is the maximum. That is historically high. That is extraordinary, once-in-a-generation type salvage efforts. Margate itself was only 12.5%, and the facts in Margate are incredibly compelling. It was an oil tanker with 9 million gallons of fuel oil. When it undertook the rescue, it was drifting toward the shoal. When it finally succeeded, its propeller was churning mud. So those facts, a crew of 25 worked for 2 1/3 days. Completely different from the facts here. Now, the court found that the plaintiffs acted with great skill and that the conditions were dangerous, but in comparison to Margate, the time worked substantially less, the number of people substantially less, and the value of the salving vessel, the court said, substantially less. That is why the court said the award should be lower than the award in Margate, and yet it departed from that when it actually entered the percentage. If this award of 20%, which again, this court in Margate and the treatise it relied on has said is the highest possible in American law, if an award of 20% applies here, that's just going to dramatically change the law of salvage, if that is allowed to stand. While plaintiffs, even if this court concludes that these plaintiffs did successfully effect a salvage, the district court's findings do not support any conclusion that this is one of the most incredible salvage efforts in American history. So 20% is...
Refresh my memory. What's the dollar amount?
The dollar amount is $3.76 million. And the award in Margate was, I believe, $4.25 million. So the dollar amount is less because the value of the salved property is less, but again, the percentage is nearly twice as high. And finally, the district court erred by considering benefits to third parties in the damages award. The court said, in its opinion, courts can consider the benefit that third parties obtain from salvage operations, and it cited this court's decision in Allseas. Well, that was error. What this court said in Allseas was that traditional salvage law does not reward a salver for saving the ship owner from liability for damages to other ships, oil rigs, or other property. And more recently, in Dorothy J., the Eastern District of New York said the salvage convention, the more recent law that the district court applied here, also does not allow consideration of third-party liability as a factor in salvage awards, because of the difficulty and raw unpredictability involved in estimating the monetary value of a reduction in liability. This case demonstrates the wisdom of that decision to not consider benefits to third parties in salvage awards. When addressing environmental liability, the district court in this case found that the plaintiffs had failed to establish, and I'm quoting here from paragraph 28A, specific damage that was prevented by the salvage plaintiffs. So given that finding, that the benefits to third parties, that there were no specific benefits shown in the context of environmental liability, it makes perfect sense that the general law that benefits to third parties should not increase salvage awards should have been applied here. And that's another reason why the salvage award was an abuse of discretion. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you. You have reserved your rebuttal time. All right, Mr. Flanagan.
May it please the Court, Thomas Flanagan on behalf of the salvage plaintiffs. I'd like to address 3 points in my time today. First, the parties agree that the salvage motive, why they did what they did, changes nothing. So calling motive specific intent is not an end around that rule. Why the plaintiffs rescued 23 ARTCO barges as a hurricane battered New Orleans has no bearing on ARTCO's liability. Second, even if the law were different, the district court found that the plaintiffs acted with an intention to benefit property other than their own, so they satisfied any supposed intent requirement. And third, on quantum, liberal compensation is the rule, and determining what to award is left to the sound discretion of the district court. The court's reasoned award here is well within historical bounds. Let me talk about this idea of specific intent. The law of salvage goes back some 3,000 years, but we don't need to go that far today, just to 1879, in a case called the Sabine from the US Supreme Court. And the Sabine established that parties have to establish 3 elements for what's called pure salvage, as distinct from contract salvage. They need to show property in marine peril. They need to show voluntariness. In other words, they were not compelled to do what they did by law or contract. And they need to show success in whole or in part. ARTCO proposes a 4th element, that the salvers have the specific intent in their minds to benefit the owner of the property. And it's unclear whether they envision that as an exclusive intent or, Judge Stewart, as to your question, whether you can have an intent to benefit more than one person at any one time. But before addressing why the plaintiffs did what they did, I think it's helpful to address what. The what should come before the why. The district court made express findings on what the plaintiffs did. They worked throughout the night as a hurricane battered New Orleans, high winds on the Mississippi River, and they were successful in slowing, catching, and beaching slash mooring 23 vessels that broke away from ARTCO's fleet. That's record page 1065. So these findings are well supported. They should be well supported in any case. And so that leads the why. Why did they do it if, in fact, it matters? And cases and commentators say over and over again that motive doesn't matter. Could be altruism, hope of financial gain. It can even be error, as the Second Circuit and Benedict on Admiralty pointed out. Now, ARTCO agrees with us that motive is never a consideration. That's on page 1 of its reply brief. And on page 2 of its reply brief, it says, and I quote, "The law does not inquire into why the plaintiff decided to offer voluntary service." So why is off the table? We can trace ARTCO, nevertheless, it's still arguing, though, motive in the garb of specific intent. But this is a motive argument in disguise. After all, another way of asking what someone's intent is to ask, why did they do it? That's the same reason why someone would ask about motive. And in the district court, the defendant argued that this was a question of motive. They said the court should dismiss the case because the plaintiffs were, quote, motivated by self-interest. That's page 1854. But salvage law is simply not concerned with why a party takes some action. We can trace ARTCO's error to a commentator's shorthand reference to the merit. And what happened in the merit is that volunteers put out a fire at Pier 5. That's where all of the water was trained, all of their physical activities were trained on Pier 5 in putting out that fire. But not far away at Pier 4 was a vessel called the Leviathan. And the Leviathan was perilously close to the fire and was getting charred. When the firefighters and the volunteers put out the fire at Pier 5, it redounded to the benefit of the Leviathan. And those volunteers sued the Leviathan and said that we are entitled to salvage from you. And the Supreme Court, and this is the rule of merit, Whatever the aid or benefit resulting to the Leviathan, it was incidental and indirect. For that reason, a claim for salvage cannot be sustained. There's other cases, City of Columbia, San Cristobal from this court, that are all to the same effect. When you deal with a fire or a problem at location one or vessel one, the fact that someone at location two or vessel two experiences a benefit, well, it's not going to entitle the plaintiffs to a salvage award from the secondary beneficiary. So if we applied that rule here, what it would mean is that the plaintiffs could not recover against any downriver businesses, and they could not maintain a salvage action in court and contend that by virtue of our beaching, catching, saving the ARTCO vessels, we spared you a lot of trouble. And no doubt they did, but we could not go against those downriver businesses and recover. That's the rule of the merit. Now here, there's no doubt that ARTCO was the direct beneficiary of the plaintiff's actions. After all, it was their vessels that were stopped, caught, turned around, moved, beached, and watched over all night to make sure that they didn't get back into the turbulent Mississippi. There was nothing accidental or inadvertent or incidental about the benefit conferred on ARTCO through the salvage plaintiff's actions. But there is a different path for the court. Might be an easier path, not necessarily, but it wouldn't matter because even if there's a specific intent requirement, the district court found that the intent here by the plaintiffs went beyond protecting their own property. And just for clarification, it was not to protect downriver property. It was to protect non-lower river surface property. In other words, property other than their own, and that's at findings of fact, pages 1064 and 1065. The district court found the plaintiff's testimony, quote, particularly credible on whether their intentions went beyond protecting their own property. And the court noted the sincerity in particular of Troy Carrault, the father of Nicholas and Andre and one of the owners of Lower River, when he testified, I am a mariner. A mariner does correct for everyone, whether it's his barge, a ship's barge, it does not matter. Everybody is the same level. Your equipment is their equipment. It's all the same. Try to save it. Nothing supports upsetting the finding of liability based on a new intent requirement because the salvage plaintiffs had the intent to benefit others and directly benefited ARTCO in this case.
Counsel opposite argues in brief that affirming the district court's determination or non-determination of specific intent in effect opened some gaping hole in maritime law that, you know, sort of a parade of horribles, if you will, damage-wise and so on and so forth, the argument being the holding here should be constrained to stay within the recognized limits, et cetera. What do you say, I mean, to that?
Well, I would say the district court is within recognized limits. Again, it's hard to imagine more direct physical action to save someone's property than using a towboat against 50 miles an hour winds, chasing it down the Mississippi River. Once you get it, even then being pushed two football fields downriver by the velocity of these heavy barges, perhaps weighing up to 1,600 tons. So it's hard to imagine a case that satisfies the rule of the merit more than this one. And I would also emphasize, Your Honor, there's no floodgates here because the rule of merit would suggest that those other beneficiaries down the line, well, they're safe from any salvage action. These salvage plaintiffs did not sue and could not have sued these other businesses who were spared further direct hits by these breakaway barges. So one would imagine if this were such a sea change, we would see cases that would make a distinction between motive and specific intent. But these cases are not. They're making a distinction between direct benefits and indirect and incidental benefits. ARTCO was in position one. Its barges were saved directly. Let me turn now to the award itself. This court in Margate calls for liberal awards, and other courts have said that scanty awards contravene public policy. The court also calls for deference, So long as the district court applied the correct legal principles, the award should be affirmed unless it's so grossly excessive or inadequate as to be an abuse of discretion. Now here, unlike many cases, unlike even in Margate, there was not one vessel saved. There were 23 vessels that were coming downriver in the dark with no aid in sight, no Coast Guard. Even the contract service retained by ARTCO refused to go out on the river because it was too dangerous. The value of those vessels was some $18.8 million. The court awarded $3.76 million, which is millions less than the inflation-adjusted award in Margate. That inflation-adjusted award would be $6.9 million in 2021. The district court did the analysis. So here's some $3.2 million more.
Margate is a 1998 case. You know, definitionally, you started at 1876, so obviously age, antiquity doesn't necessarily change a lot, but I asked, you know, Margate's a 1998 calendar case, which, you know, is a while from where we are. Does it matter? Because he did percentage as opposed to the dollar. In other words, if you're analyzing it on the dollar value, clearly we might discern, well, that was 1998 money, and this is 2025, but he did it on a percentage. So does it matter, you know, that that was 1998? That's not it now. That's just a question because you all do this work all the time.
And Your Honor, the fact that it's a 1998 case, I think as you pointed out, these cases are so few and far between. So this is a rarity that we have a case like this. In fact, this is, to my knowledge, the first federal case based on salvage on the Mississippi River. So very uncommon cases. I don't think there's anything about 1998 in particular. I do think it's fair to look at the inflation-adjusted award. And one more point on percentages. What Margate said is we've got very valuable property. Well, the percentage will probably come down. On the other hand, when we have property that's not worth all that much, and if you would give someone 5% of a vessel that doesn't have great value, well, you're not giving a meaningful recovery. So the percentages somewhat turn on the amounts. Here, our amount is about $18.8 million, again, compared with $33 million in Margate. So I think the percentage here is going to trend upward because of that smaller amount. What Margate told us as well is, in terms of looking at precedent and applying it, that it would look to its prior jurisprudence, and I quote, in only the most deferential and general way. I think that's one of the errors that our opponents make, is that they treat Margate as establishing almost like a workers' compensation schedule. That if Margate said that X is a proper amount here, then our task is simply to chip away, to analyze, and to come up with why based on some unique facts in our case. And I don't think that's the proper approach. That's not what Margate prescribed. Again, to look at precedent in only a deferential and general way. Counsel's argument, as eloquent as it was not deferential or general. It was granular and detailed. But I don't think we can do that. The second mistake is related. It assumes that Margate was the highest possible award on those facts and that it's impossible to go higher, but that's not so. The court in Margate said that the number there was smack in the middle of the historical range, and the court said it was strained to find any error, much less an abuse of discretion. So here the district court applied the convention factors and the black wall factors, and everyone agreed that but for the environment, they're the same. Again, the value of the vessels, $18.8 million, that's undisputed. The other side had an expert at trial, chose not to call him, sent him home. They did stipulate that that expert's analysis would have followed the same methodology. So we've got the starting point, 18.8, which the courts say is one of the most important factors under the convention or the Blackwall factors. The environment is not an issue. We didn't cross appeal. We acknowledge the deference due to fact findings of the district court. And that gets us to number three, which is the measure of success. And the district court found that the salvage plaintiffs were, quote, highly successful. The ARTCO barges were in imminent danger of complete loss, and that's record page 1073. And the record bears that out. ARTCO barges struck the Shell Fueler owned by the plaintiffs, struck the St. Charles owned by the plaintiffs, struck the Atlantic Maya, a 600-foot ocean-going vessel, knocked it out of commerce, and had to be towed back to South America with $1 million in damage, and caused millions of dollars of damage at the Crescent Ship dock. Now, counsel says the court should not have considered benefit to third parties. Well, Allseas, in an opinion by Judge Rubin, said that the economic interest in third parties makes perfect sense to consider, and the only reason the court didn't was because of the Limitation of Liability Act. And so that's where things get controversial in different cases, where courts consider whether they can increase the value of the vessels, here $18.8 million, to consider averted liability. That's not what happened here. What happened here is like what happened in a case called Trico, which Judge Clement handled as a district court judge. It was considered as one factor among many in looking at the full picture of the outcome of the salvage plaintiffs. And it stands to reason that someone in ARTCO's position, and any rational economic actor, would pay more if they knew that their breakaway barges could cause all manner of chaos and entangle them in litigation and risk. A rational actor would pay more, and Margate tells us to consider that. If there could be a negotiation between property owner and salvors, what would they consider and what would they regard as fair? Well, one consideration would surely be, what are the consequences of these breakaway barges left unattended in a very developed part of South Louisiana? Moving on, the nature and the degree of the danger. The district court found extreme danger. So dangerous was it that a then 24-year-old captain, Nicholas Carroll, got behind the Shell fueler and single-handedly, along with lookouts, his father, his brother, in a support role, tracked down these barges down the Mississippi River, brought them back, beached them, and made sure they stayed put overnight, again, in strong winds and turbulent conditions. ARTCO had someone on contract that was supposed to look after its 500 vessels when it sent its own employees home. And those men testified. They're both named Captain Billiot, a father and son, and they both said they were unwilling to go out on the river that night because it was too dangerous. They would go the next morning. And yet Captain Nicholas Carrault, in an action of uncommon bravery, went out there, and the district court recognized that. The skill and the efforts, it was extraordinary skill. We had an expert witness on tugboat operations, Captain Michael Berry, and he spoke to that. The other factors, the promptness of the services, the availability and use of other vessels. Here, there was exactly one group of people willing to help out ARTCO as Hurricane Ida passed through New Orleans, and they're the salvage plaintiffs. ARTCO's employees didn't help. Their contracted service did not help. So in conclusion, these are fact-specific cases. We can't look to another case and to say that that case sets a value, and we have only to adjust numbers and spit out a particular award. This district court had discretion to consider all of these factors. She awarded a lot less, millions less, on an inflation-based basis than the Margate did. And so for that reason, in light of the perilous and extraordinary service, we ask that this court affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flanagan. Back to you for rebuttal, Ms. Flint.
Thank you, Your Honors. A few points on rebuttal. First, my friend talked about direct action as involving physical contact with another vessel. Counsel said that's the lesson to draw from Merritt, not what you intend to save, what the salver intends to save, but what property, what object the salver has physical contact with. The case law just does not support that. The Benedict Treatise says this succinctly. Section 26 of Benedict on Admiralty says, the salvage service need not always take the form of physical assistance rendered to the imperiled property. And there are ample cases where the service was physically directed to another piece of property, but the plaintiff intended to rescue a vessel, like the Neshaminy, which I spoke about before, where the salvors extinguished a fire on a dry dock with the intent to benefit a barge moored to that dry dock. That was salvage. Meanwhile, there are cases where the plaintiffs physically act on an object, but they don't intend to rescue that object. That's a case like Barry, where the plaintiffs pulled up lobster traps, but they were not intending to rescue those lobster traps. In that case, no salvage, despite the physical action on those lobster traps. The case law simply does not support this notion of physical contact being the be-all and end-all for salvage. Instead, specific intent is the concept that runs through the case law. And specific intent to rescue ARTCO barges is not found here. That finding about saving non-lower river property is not a finding. The district court made no finding that the plaintiffs intended to save ARTCO barges. Now on damages, my friend argued that the damage award should be reviewed deferentially. While it's true that it's reviewed for abuse of discretion, this court made clear in Margate and Allseas that review is not toothless. This court is free to enter a different damages award if it finds it required by the law. Second, counsel argued that Margate supports this idea that you can move the percentage up if the value of the property salved is lower. Margate said exactly the opposite. It did recognize that there is a specific category of cases where the value of the salved property is so low that applying a low percentage wouldn't give the salver back their costs. And the court said, in that small category of cases, we need to make sure the salver at least gets their costs. So for those especially low value cases, we will adjust a higher percentage. But in the world of high value property like this, nearly $19 million of barges in question, we don't do that. In the world of high value property, you fix the percentage and you are not allowed. The court was very explicit that the district court in Margate erred by saying, I will just adjust the percentage up if the appellate court finds that the property value is lower than I think it is. Margate said, that is wrong. It doesn't give sufficient weight to the value of the property.
You don't dispute that all of ARCO's vessels were salvaged, right?
There was a dispute in the lower court about which vessels were salvaged. The court found 23 barges were salvaged, and we haven't challenged that on appeal.
Okay, so did they accidentally salvage them?
They did not intend to rescue those ARTCO barges.
Did
their
they
intent,
accidentally do it?
They did not accidentally do it. They did it for the benefit of both themselves, their own property.
You just argued you had third-party vendors and your crew, and neither of those rescued, salvaged the 23 that you acknowledged. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Counsel opposite says you had a third-party concern engaged, plus your, not you personally, employees, and none of those persons salvaged, retrieved, or otherwise mitigated the damage to the 23 that you acknowledged. Is that correct?
So I may have spoken imprecisely. The 23 barges were beached. We don't agree that they were salvaged. We think they were not salvaged because they didn't satisfy the requirements for salvage.
Well,
on your question
court,
about a contractor.
If the court found that they were salvaged and that's not abuse of discretion, then for the purpose of this question, those 23 would be in the zone of properties that were salvaged, right?
Those were beached. The district court found they were beached by the plaintiffs.
All right, those facts, specific intent is often discerned indirectly in every kind of case because rarely can somebody get in somebody's mind. So why would it be reversible error for the district court on this record, on these facts, with 23 vessels, et cetera, to conclude at the end that specific intent was shown on this record?
Right. Well, two responses, Your Honor. First, the court didn't find specific intent shown. It found only an intent to rescue non-lower river property, which is not specific intent to rescue ARTCO barges under the case law, which is about the defendant's vessel has to be the target, the intended target of the action. That's the first answer. And the second answer is the plaintiffs themselves, their testimony was explicit.
What's the testimony? You got a red light. I just wanted a specific answer, and I think you've given it to me.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. We'd ask that the judgment be reversed, or in the alternative, that the award be reduced.
All right.
Thank you,
counsel. We appreciate the argument in briefs. In this case, all the cases argued this morning, along with the NOAs, will be submitted. The panel stands in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.